Irishman is giggling. "Shut up," I hiss. I throw his shirt at him. "Get dressed." My heart is thumping in my ears. I will whoever it is to go away as I manage to hook my bra back on and put my shirt back on. There's silence on the other side, and I picture someone listening, one hand cupped around their ear against the door. Finally, the shadow moves away, and I bow my head in relief as I get my breath back. "Let's get out of here," I whisper, suddenly furious with this man for having put me in this position. I open the door an inch, check that the coast is clear. He puts his hand on my arm. "Wait," I shrug him off. "I have to go." I march down the hall, back to the party. A few stragglers are convened in the corner near the cheese board. Jeff is nowhere to be seen. I snatch my bag that is still hanging off the back of a chair and leave quickly, almost running to the car park. Only then do I remember the photograph he took. I'd meant to get him to delete it immediately, but in that moment of almost getting caught out, I forgot. I start the car, and I see him as I drive out. He is standing on the sidewalk, his arms out wide in disbelief. I want to stop to get him to delete the photo, but the traffic is moving and it's too late. I bite my lip so hard it bleeds as my stomach clenches into tight knots the whole way home. When I get back, I turn off the ignition and sit in the dark with my forehead against the steering wheel. I can't believe what I did back there. What was I thinking? That being unfaithful was going to help me get my husband back? I don't give a shit about the promotion. Not when my marriage is at stake. My family is the most important thing to me, and to think I would risk it so foolishly makes me hit my head with a closed fist, like that's going to put some sense back into me. I lean back against the seat. It's okay. It's not the end of the world. He seemed like a nice enough guy. Tomorrow I will go and see him and ask him to delete the photo. Then I will concentrate my energy on my family. Maybe if I can figure out who Lewis is having an affair with, I can warn her off. It's just a fling, surely. Lewis loves me. I know he does. And he is the most devoted father and the most devoted husband. Isn't he? Chapter 11. The following morning, I walk straight into the law building, through the tiled entrance, down the corridor, and upstairs to the office where I was the night before. I am determined. I tell myself I have every right to demand he delete that photo. I am desperately trying to work out what I'll do if he refuses. The door to the office is open, but instead of him, I come face to face with a woman with short gray hair and a birthmark on her left cheek. She is sitting behind the only desk in the room. She looks up over her glasses, startled. "Can I help you?"
I'm looking for..."
I don't know who I am looking for. I don't even know his name.
"This is your office?"
"Yes. And you are?"
"There was a..." I am stuttering. I can't put words together to form a coherent sentence anymore. I try again. "I was at Professor Bashki's retirement party last night."
"And?"
"I'm looking for a man. He has a beard and green eyes."
She frowns, giving a small impatient shake of the head, understandably. She makes me feel like a schoolgirl tracking down the boy she kissed last night. Except I am almost 40 years old. She returns to her task.
"I have no idea who you're talking about. I'm sorry. Try admin down the hall."
"Okay. Thank you. My mistake."
I walk back out, surreptitiously scanning the floor on the way out in case I left anything behind last night. Like my bra. Or my self-respect. I walk briskly in the direction she pointed me to, and after a couple of wrong turns, I spot the sign that says, "Student Services, Administration."
The door is open, and immediately I see the back of him. He is bending slightly at the water cooler. He turns around at my approach, a cup of water in one hand, and a grin spreads over his face.
"Well, hello there," he says, with a slight sneer that makes a shudder run down my spine, and not in a good way. He runs a hand through his hair.
"It's nice to see you. You ran off very quickly last night."
My eyes dart around the room to see who might be listening.
"Can I talk to you for a moment?"
Two women at opposite desks look up.
"Sure."
I motion for him to follow me out until we're safely out of earshot. I stop, put my hand out.
"Do you have your phone with you?"
He cocks his head and gives me a small smile.
"My phone?"
"You know."
We're alone, but I check my surroundings anyway. Then I lean closer.
"You took a photo of me last night," I whisper. My stomach churns just saying the words.
"I did."
"I need you to delete it, please."
He lifts his chin and stares at me for a moment.
"And what if I don't?"
My heart races.
"You have to. I never gave you permission."
As if that ever meant anything to anyone.
"Maybe I like to look at it."
He winks.
"Maybe I..."
But I'm very close to him now, so angry that my nostrils are flaring.
"You'd better delete that photo right now. I wasn't kidding when I said I never gave you permission. There are laws. I'll have you arrested or fired or whatever it takes."
He raises both hands in surrender.
"Okay, wow. Hold your horses there, lady. I was just kidding."
"And I can't take a joke, so give me your phone."
He turns around and walks back in the direction of the admin office. For a moment, I think he's just left me there, abandoned the conversation. My heart is pounding as I try to figure out what my next move is. But as I get to the door, I see him rummaging through a backpack on a chair by his desk. He pulls out his phone, taps the screen, and walks back to where I am standing. I am so relieved it makes my legs wobble.
"Ryan?"
He turns around. A woman standing at the photocopier makes a face.
"It's stuck. Can you take a look?"
"Sure. Give me a sec."
When he returns, he holds up the screen to show me.
"Done."
I narrow my eyes at him and reach for the phone. He hands it over. I flick through the camera roll. The last few pictures are of a dog in a park, a golden retriever with a red bandana tied loosely around its neck. I scroll down quickly, my hands shaking. There's a blur of people, an older couple in a restaurant, him with his arm around a woman, a red-haired girl, both of them grinning, more pictures of the dog, sun setting in a park that looks vaguely familiar, him, Ryan, with his arm around an older man's shoulders, a family resemblance. His dad, I suspect. After I've scrolled all the way up to the beginning, photos dated from over a year ago, I hand it back to him.
"Thank you."
He smirks.
"You want to catch up for a coffee sometime?"
"No." I turn around to walk away.
"Anna?"
I stop, spin around. "How do you know my name?" He gives an exaggerated eyeball roll.
"Geez, paranoid much? You told me."
He sneers at me, like a cocky teenager. Did I really almost have sex with this man? What on earth was I thinking? I have a family. I have children, for Christ's sake. I blame Lewis. Lewis, who can't keep his penis in his pants. Lewis, who lied to me about where he was at the time I needed him most. Lewis, who suddenly drinks out of tall-stemmed wine glasses and eats olives stuffed with yak cheese off handmade pottery. Ryan puts his hand on my arm, but I shrug it off while pretending to pull the strap of my bag farther up my shoulder.
"You don't need to be embarrassed about last night," he says.
"I'm not," I blurt. I feel myself blush crimson. "I'm not embarrassed. I am humiliated.
There are more people around now, students, staff, professors, and I wish he would shut up.
My eyes dart around like ball bearings in a pinball machine, frantically checking to see if anyone is listening.
Let's just forget about it, okay?
If you say so. Want to be friends? I'd like to be friends.
Sorry, I really don't have time for that.
Then I add, but if you mention anything about last night, I'll deny it.
I march out, and this time he doesn't call out to me or try to stop me.
I can still feel his hand on my skin, like a burn. I have a class that morning. Calculus. First years. I teach it on autopilot, distracted by everything going on in my life. Alex, Jeff, Ryan, Lewis. When it's over, I walk out and run into Jeff. Again. I'm beginning to wonder if he's doing it on purpose. Maybe he prefers to have all our conversations in corridors.
What happened to you last night? I went looking for you everywhere. I thought we could share a cab home.
I almost blurt that I left early, claim a headache, then remember my handbag hanging on the back of the chair.
Yes, sorry. I got sidetracked in conversation.
Yeah, I saw that. That guy, right?
He smiles.
You two seemed to have a lot to talk about. Then you both disappeared.
I felt a blush creep up my neck. Right. Anyway, Jeff, I really have to go.
Sure, sure. You have time for a chat after work?
Why?
No particular reason. I just want to see how you are. I imagine Alex's death must have hit you pretty hard.
Thanks, but I can't. I am already walking away when he speaks again.
Okay, next time then. I'm worried about you.
He shouts to my receding back.
Chapter 12. 1 week later, and I barely think about Alex anymore. It's a terrible thing to say, I know that. And when I do think of him, it is with anger. It's the thought that he used me just so he wouldn't have to write the paper himself that makes my chest vibrate. His death? I don't know. Maybe it hasn't really sunk in. Maybe it never will. At this point, all I think about is Lewis. Like I'm stuck on a loop. Lewis and me, Lewis and I, Lewis and some other woman. The idea that Lewis is having an affair, by now I have convinced myself of this fact, is obsessing me. Whenever he's out of the house, I rummage through his things, his pockets, the drawer of the small desk that is unofficially his in the corner of the living room, the family computer that also is unofficially his and on which he keeps his email account. Carla came up with the password to that computer, and it's scribbled on a post-it note sticky taped to the bottom of the screen, Shay Lay Sanchez. I trawl through his emails, fingers in my mouth, other hand on the mouse, scrolling, reading, until my eyes bleed. Nothing. Nothing unusual in his appointment book either, not even a squiggle or a code word that I can detect among Lewis's organized, neat, everything spelt out entries. I pore over his cell phone bills, looking for a repeated number, an unusual one. I call the ones I don't recognize. Hello, is this the aquarium? But they're all legitimate numbers. Art supplies stores, 3D printing, packing and transport, Perry Cube Gallery, recycling plants. Although it's not to say he didn't meet her at one of those places, obviously. One day I surprise him at the studio for lunch. Salt and pepper calamari with creamy horseradish, his favorite. I don't find him in flagrante delicto, which I take as evidence that it's all in my head. He seems pleased to see me, so that's even better. We eat lunch on the couch in front of the giant nest, and he serves it on those pretty plates.
Where did you get those? I ask.
He shrugs. Can't remember. Probably for one of the open studio shows.
And really, the more I try to catch him out, the more innocent he seems. The more I tell myself I'm being paranoid. It's my imagination getting the better of me, and a thousand other cliches. I convince myself that the whole Alex thing got me rattled and that I'm not thinking straight. But then the suspicious voice inside me pipes up. You know he didn't get takeout from the deli that night. He lied to you. And every time I think of that lie, my blood boils all over again. I spend hours awake at night thinking of all the things I do for my family, and that I do them with joy and gratitude. I clean, I cook, I sent the kids to private schools plus ballet and drama and coding camp for Carla, and soccer and fencing for Mateo, date nights with my husband once a month. Did we go last month? I can't remember. Sex once a week at least. And yet, somehow, it's never enough. I'm never enough. June has brought me coffee in a real cup and saucer, and a plate of cookies. She has done this every day this week, bar one. The other day I finally asked, "What have I done to deserve this?" That day, when the associate dean shouted at me, "You were very kind. I just wanted to say thanks." "Oh, really? Well, if that's the case, I'm thrilled he snapped at you. I hope he snaps at you lots more," I said, which made her guffaw.
"So, how are you feeling this morning?" she asks now.
"I'm okay, June. Thank you."
I bite off the edge of a cookie.
"Ginger?"
She nods, gives me a small, satisfied smile.
"With cinnamon."
"Wow, they're amazing," I mumble, mouth full, catching a stray crumb trying to escape.
She laughs. "You said that yesterday, and the day before."
"What can I say? You outdo yourself every day, June, and every day I love you a little more for it." She claps happily.
"Great! And it's a new recipe I wanted to try."
I nod, shoveling the rest of the cookie in my mouth.
"It's a keeper."
"Fabulous. Well, I'd better get back to it."
She's at the door when she stops, turns and says,
"Alex's parents. His father, I mean. He called. I'm sorry, but he wants us to FedEx anything of Alex's that is still here. Is it all right for you to bring me anything you might have?"
My skin prickles.
"What things?" I ask. "Any personal papers, I guess. Did he have some textbooks, maybe, in his drawer?"
She starts to walk towards it, and I spring upright.
"I'll do it,"
I blurt. She stops, startled.
"Only if you want to. Otherwise, I can."
"Thank you, June. That's very thoughtful. But it's fine. I'd like to. And anyway, there isn't much."
"Whatever you have. I'll send it off this morning."
"Of course. Give me a minute. I'll bring them out." She walks out, and I go to his little desk and sit down. It's an old wooden desk that someone from Resources found God knows where, in some dark basement by the looks of it, and had brought up. We're so broke now, we can't even afford new desks. I run my hand along the top of it, and bits of dust stick to my palm. I open the first drawer and lift out two textbooks. I shake out the pages, but nothing falls out. I riffle through an almost empty drawer and gather the tidbits, junk mostly, he left behind. A bureau, an eraser, a ruler and a hole puncher, of all things. I put them in a large envelope and put that on top of the textbooks. In the other drawer, I find a notebook filled with squiggles and dark drawings and daggers dripping with blood over names that make no sense to me. I shove it in the trash can. I can't see there's anything there to bring joy to anyone. I'm actually relieved, but I don't know why exactly. I don't know what I thought I might find.
but whatever it was, it's not there. Then I go to my own desk and unlock the bottom drawer. That's where we kept his special notebooks, the ones I was supposed to bring along the day he died, but forgot. I stare at them. 9 large black spiral notebooks. They were his favorite type, he said. He liked the paper. He wouldn't use anything else. I rest them on my lap, run my fingers along their edges. I open one at random. The proof. The only copy. I hesitate, glance at the door to make sure no one is watching, then slip them back in the drawer and lock them up again. I don't know why I do that. Maybe because his parents won't know or appreciate what they contain, and I need to think carefully about what to do with them. I give June the pile.
That's it?
Yes.
Thank you. You look tired. Can you go home early?
Actually, I have to go home early. Big day today. It's Lewis's opening night at Pericube.
Oh, good luck with it. I hope it goes well.
Thank you, June. I sure hope so. He has been working so hard. I am reapplying my lipstick in front of the mirror in the living room. Propped on the mantelpiece is the invitation for tonight's opening. One side displays a detail of The Nest, the largest work in the exhibition. On the other is the time and date and the usual blurb. You are invited to the opening of Without Us, an exhibition by Luis Sanchez at Pericube Gallery. Luis has been at the gallery all day, but he's returned to get changed. He comes downstairs now, dressed in black jeans and a black shirt and a gray tie. You look very handsome, I say, straightening his tie.
Thanks, babe. I'm nervous as hell. Look how sweaty my palms are.
He shows them to me before rubbing them on his thighs. They're going to love you, I say.
You think?
Yes, I do. I've finally started to believe I really was paranoid, that there was a simple explanation for why he wasn't at the studio that night. But since I never mentioned I was there, I just haven't been able to bring it up. And now it's well and truly too late, too weird, and it would display my lack of trust.
You're so jealous sometimes, Anna. Why can't you trust me?
He'd say, like he has said every other time. He puts his arms around me and hugs me close, but not the way I would have liked. I want his hug to be like, let me rip those clothes off your sexy body. Instead, I get a soft pat-pat on the back before he pulls away. I stand there, one hand on my hip.
Notice anything?
He takes a moment. I sweep one arm over my body to show my outfit. He laughs.
Yes, you look beautiful.
I'm wearing wide pants and high heels and a yellow puff sleeve shirt. I bought the outfit at Beechwood Place yesterday. I spend hours in there, choosing the right look. Now I catch sight of our reflection in the mirror. And there's no doubt we still make a beautiful couple after all these years. Carla stomps down the stairs and stops in her tracks at the sight of us.
Wow, you guys spruce up nice. Where are you off to?
For a moment, I think she's forgotten this is her father's big night, and I'm about to tell her off, but then I catch the grin on her face. Ha ha, I say. Very funny. She holds out a small package wrapped in pretty crepe paper.
There you go, Dad. I just wanted to say congratulations. I love you.
Lewis takes the present, and she puts her arms around his neck and briefly rests her head on his shoulder, and I think to myself, there's no way he's having an affair. He wouldn't jeopardize his family. He loves us too much. Carla pulls away while he unwraps his present.
I'd say break a leg, Dad, but you don't have to because I know you're going to knock him dead.
He's holding a beautiful book bound in leather, adorned with colorful birds. He opens it and caresses its thick, cream-colored blank pages, a luxurious sketching book.
It's beautiful. Thank you, sweetheart.
He kisses the top of her head.
Maybe not dead, if that's okay. I need them to live long enough to write glowing reviews, maybe even buy a piece or two.
She nods.
Not dead, then. Just their socks off.
I reach out to her and wrap my arms around her. Has Maddie finished his homework?
He's doing it now, she says.
And don't let him play Xbox tonight, please, okay?
Yes, Mother.
And don't go to bed too late. Both of you.
Yes, Mother.
And I love you.
Yes, Mother.
Okay, go away. She giggles, quickly disentangles herself from me, plants a kiss on my cheek, and runs back up the stairs.
I'm so happy tonight. For Louis, and for me.
It's the kind of thing I live for, this feeling that we are joined at the hip, meeting the world together, showing it what we're capable of. Tonight feels like we're about to embark on a great journey together. Louis's first major exhibition at one of the most prestigious private art galleries in the country, and me by his side. But then, as Isabel, the pretty millennial-type curator, keeps bringing people over to Louis who absolutely have to meet you, Louis, and Perry, the gallery owner, a small, bald man with thick-rimmed glasses, gives a speech that tells of
the exceptionally beautiful works that have become Louis Sanchez's signature, never failing to bring to our attention the urgent issues we confront today.
Something shifts in my world. At first, it's not even a shift, more like a hairline crack quietly creeping up in my line of vision. Maybe it's because red dots begin to appear next to every artwork, too quickly to keep count. It dawns on me just how many people are here, and who they are. Not just art buyers, but serious collectors. They represent institutions and private collections, and they have traveled from all over the country to admire and acquire Louis's artworks. This has never happened before, and I experience something so unexpected that it takes me a while to recognize it. Fear. Of being left behind. I used to think that the reason I held the family together was because I was indispensable. I work, I pay the bills, I support my husband in his career. Not for the first time, it occurs to me that my own prospects of success have passed me by. Suddenly, I am just an ordinary math teacher, and Louis has chiseled his way into a bigger future while I wasn't paying attention. Could that be because I work long hours in a small airless office, then come home and put on a load of laundry? I make lunches for the kids to take to school and keep everyone to a regimented schedule of ballet lessons and soccer practice. And now, Louis has met his destiny, and he doesn't need me anymore. My husband doesn't need me anymore. If only I'd been better at forging a career, become someone he could be proud to be seen with in public. Suddenly, I feel like I never reached my potential, and now it's too late. That I am a disappointment to everyone.
Don't be silly, says absolutely no one, especially not my mother.
I was looking away, nowhere in particular, lost in that hairline crack that has turned into a chasm by now, when I hear his voice. He is giving his speech, delivering his lines with boyish charm and self-deprecating jokes. It's a brilliant speech. Short and sweet, funny, very interesting and completely different from what I'd expected had I bothered to think about it. And most importantly, it holds everyone's attention. You could have heard a pin drop right until the end. He's glowing, my husband, like there's a halo around him. His eyes are upon me, filled with pride and love, and I smile back at him, my eyes similarly sparkling with joy, my cheeks flushed with pleasure in the glow of his love. But then it dawns on me. It's not me they're looking at. Those eyes filled with pride and love. I see now that they're focused on a point just to my left, and I slowly turn around to look over my shoulder until I locate the object of his adoring gaze. Chapter 13. Isabel. Beautiful, ethereal Isabel. Even her name rolls off the tongue like a promise. Isabel. Young Isabel. Very young. I can't peel my eyes off her. I stare at her shiny blonde hair styled in an elaborate updo, her perfect porcelain skin, her sparkly blue eyes, and all I can think is, give up now, Anna. It's over. Just pick up your bat and go home. I've been slowly edged towards the back of the crowd as people elbowed their way closer to Lewis. My outfit, which I was convinced up until now was stylish and professional, suddenly seems all wrong. Like I've made an effort, but not the right one. I am dressed for an important meeting, while every other woman in the room is elegant, wealthy, sexy. Isabel is dazzling in a slate-gray flowing layered ensemble that cascades in ripples of silk down her front, showing off her perfect breasts. At least I was right about that part. Whereas I look like a life insurance salesperson on her way to a seminar. You can feel the sexual tension between them even standing as they are at opposite ends of the room. My chest is rising and falling with the effort of breathing. Were they together that night while I waited alone in Lewis's studio? Of course they were. That's what he's been doing these past few weeks, when I thought he was working hard on his exhibition. I'm under the gun, babe. An image of myself holding a shotgun to his head pops into my mind, and I leave it there for a moment because it makes me feel better. What about all the nights I worked late on my application so I could get a better job, better paid, work harder for my family? All the healthy meals I prepared while he made love to her? The instructions I left peppered with exclamation marks and tips when I couldn't be home? Salmon teriyaki. Just fry the salmon, already dusted with flour, in the fridge. In the wok with lemon juice. 1 min or so each side. Make sure the wok is super hot first. Then add the teriyaki sauce, in the little blue and white jug, also in the fridge. And when it's almost bubbling, serve it up. Vegetables are cut up, ready to steam, in the container with red lid, bottom shelf of the fridge. Sorry I have to work late again. Love you all. X. Was he licking her toes while I washed dog poop off our porch? Was she on her knees, begging for more, while I scoured for recipes that would be delicious and nutritious? A wave of nausea rises up my throat as I watch him lapping up the attention, and all I want is to walk up to him, slap him, and yell, "Remember me?" right into his face. They're posing for photos now. Lewis and Isabel. The artist and the curator. I thought Lewis and I made a nice couple, but these two together look spectacular. How long has it been going on? I try to remember when these late nights started, the evasive answers about where he went, but I can't pin it down. I was hardly there myself in the evenings. Those months of work with Alex took care of that. Is she going to reap what I've sown and tenderly nurtured all these years, while my time came and went with barely a ripple? Suddenly Lewis is by my side, a glass of champagne in his hand. None for me, I note. What do you think? He asks. I pause and gather myself. I search his face for evidence of his treachery, a twitch of guilt even. But all I find is the beaming grin of a winner. He raises his eyebrows. So? It's wonderful. Really, Lewis. Congratulations. Thank you. He smiles.
but I couldn't have done it without Isabel.
For a moment there, I thought he was going to say, but I couldn't have done it without you.
I pull my lips wide into an approximation of a smile.
She's amazing, he continues, in the tone of someone talking to himself, shaking his head in awe at how wonderful she is. It looks like she might have a shot at selling the nest to the Contemporary Art Museum for their permanent collection. Nothing concrete yet, he holds crossed fingers, but they're considering it in their current acquisition round.
He closes his eyes and tilts his face to the ceiling.
God, that would be so amazing.
Then he turns to me, and I guess he realizes I am here because he says,
hey, you should talk to her. You'd really like her. She's massively talented.
And I stand there thinking, am I ever going to wake up from this nightmare? What if I jumped in front of a bus? Would anyone even notice I was missing?
That night, when Lewis comes to bed, I pretend to be asleep. He settles in with his back to me, and within minutes he's snoring. I lean close to his ear and whisper,
you snore, did you know that?
But he doesn't move. I push the covers off me very slowly, swing my legs out of the bed, and tiptoe over to his side. His cell phone is on the side table, and I carefully pick it up. I try a code. Not for the first time, that should go without saying. I've tried them all. Kids' birthdays, wedding anniversary, the day we met, even though I'm pretty sure he has no idea when that was. I stare at it as Lewis stirs and rolls onto his back, one arm flung over the edge of the bed. Gently, softly, I lift his hand and press his thumb over the button, thanking my lucky stars he had refused to upgrade his iPhone. The environment, Anna, says the man who makes sculptures out of plastic. Ah, but it's recycled, see? The screen lights up and shudders. Try again. I press his thumb harder this time. His eyes blink open.
What are you doing?
You were having a nightmare, I whisper. Go back to sleep.
He groans, rolls over.
I'm in. I miss you.
It's right there, in black and white. And he has a nickname for her, Belle. I love you so much.
I can't do this anymore. I can't do this to my children.
Babe, please don't shut me out. We'll work it out, I promise.
I can't stop thinking about you.
And I can't stop crying. I'm sitting at the table in the kitchen, big snotty sobs erupting and dribbling down my chin. Sobs so loud I have to keep my hand over my mouth so as not to wake up the neighborhood. I scroll back quickly. The first one I find is dated April, 3 months ago.
I'm so sorry. It should never have happened.
I miss you so much.
I miss you too, Belle.
Do you love her?
Don't.
He's going to leave me. She's going to make him. You can see that a mile off, the way she's pulling at him like a drug. All I can think about are my children. How would they cope if we split up? And immediately, the next logical thought pops into my head. Who will they choose? There was a time when they were little, and I was working all the time. When they became bonded to Lewis. He was caring for them just about full time so I could work. I missed my children so much it hurt, but it seemed the right thing to do while Lewis got on with his art practice. I liked supporting him. I was proud of him. But I can still remember with a flash of pain when Mateo fell off his bike in the park and, clutching a bleeding knee, wailed from the top of his lungs, Daddy! And yet, I was right there, mere feet away.
but Louis had already scooped him up and sat him on his lap on a bench in full view of the other parents. They looked at me with pitying faces while Louis pretended to operate. Scalpel, electric saw, carefully putting a plaster with a picture of a ninja turtle on it. Where did they come from? Did he carry them in his back pocket? He kissed it better and sent him on his way. I resolved right there and then to spend a lot more time with the children. And I did. They needed me and I needed them. I think they were puzzled at first by my insistence that I'd soothe them even when they weren't that sad, and mop their brow when they weren't that sick. I read stories whether they were tired or not, and cooked hot meals that would make a child nutritionist want to quit their job and join the circus. I go back through the texts, wailing into my palm. Her last text from last night.
I love you so much I could burst. Congratulations, my love.
And all I can think is, do, please burst, please. Let your flesh rip open and bits of your organs fly out all over the walls because you just can't hold it in anymore. All this love for my husband, it made you burst. In reply, he texted, I couldn't have done it without you. You're incredible. I love how smart you are. Seriously? What about me? What am I? Chopped liver? Am I not smart enough anymore? Considering it's what has defined me my whole life, it's a blow, I won't lie. It's my nightmare of a childhood, my career and my sacrifices, and it's stupid Alex and the professorship I didn't even get. Maybe I'm not that smart. Maybe that's my problem. Maybe I'm not smart and everybody knows it except me.
Come back to bed, Anna.
My heart somersaults in my chest and I slap the phone down, screen to the table, so hard I think I might have cracked it. Louis puts his hands on my shoulders and squeezes. Without looking up, I reach up and take his hand.
I will. I just need a minute.
He picks up an empty glass from the table and puts it next to the sink. I shove the phone into the pocket of my bathrobe.
Is it Alex?
He asks, stooping down and wiping my tears with his thumb. I kind of nod, kind of not. Anything to stop myself from laughing hysterically into his face. Back in bed. He spoons me, strokes my hair. And I am so afraid I could die. I feel this yawning void stretch out before me, a schism of loneliness. All the promise of my life vanished. Alex's death has robbed me of my professional future. Louis's success has robbed me of my family. I put the pillow against my face to muffle my sobs. Chapter 14. This morning I stare at my reflection in the bathroom mirror, purple crescents beneath my eyes, puffy eyelids, frazzled brain, despairing mood.
Hey, babe, have you seen my cell phone?
I spin around. Louis is leaning into the bathroom, holding onto the door jamb.
No?
Okay. You okay? I nod quickly.
Absolutely. Great night last night, by the way. I'm sorry I got...
No, I get it.
It's his parents. I had to gather his things for them. That's what got to me.
Oh, Anna, you should have said.
Don't be silly. It was your night. And a wonderful night it was, too. I'm so proud of you.
He smiles. Slides a lock of hair in that space between his thumb and forefinger and pushes it out of the way. I can hear myself asking, are you going to leave us? But his face doesn't change, so I know it's only in my head.
I'll make coffee.
Thank you. I'll be there in a sec.
The moment he is gone, I pat the pocket of my robe and pull out his phone. After I get dressed, I make the bed and yell out, "Found your phone!" And he bounds up the stairs while I brandish it. It was on the floor. I have a quiet afternoon today, so I decide to follow her. I tell myself I just want to see what I'm up against. What is so special about her that Lewis would risk breaking up his family? He said last night that she can help him break into major collections, that the sale of the nest is just the beginning, which surely can't be reason enough that he'd leave us. Maybe she's good in bed. Maybe she does things that every man dreams of but would never dare ask his wife. Maybe I need to update my repertoire. Maybe we have fallen into the classic married couple trap, when making love is just a quick release because we're too tired to do anything else. I borrowed a cap from Carla, dark blue with a wide brim at the front and a small white pineapple logo. I know the gallery closes at 5, so I sit in my car, the cap over my ears and my oversized, unbranded, mirrored aviator sunglasses over my eyes. She emerges at 5:10, waves to someone inside, and takes off on foot down the street. I slip out of my car and follow her, past the West Side Market and into Church Avenue. She walks into a vivid blue house that looks like something out of a movie set, with a pretty garden at the front. I'm surprised. I expected her to live in one of those renovation projects, a building that would have been some kind of factory once but is now converted into lofts and oversized apartments with floor-to-ceiling windows. I get myself a takeout coffee from the deli across the road and wait idly for a while. I'm not sure she'll come out again, and I'm just starting to think, why am I here again? So she lives in a pretty blue house. Okay, can I go home now? When her front door opens. She's changed into shiny, dark gray leggings and white running shoes with a hot pink stripy pattern on the side. She walks briskly down the street and crosses the river via a small pedestrian bridge, then takes the path that I know loops around the park and along the riverfront. I'm red-faced and out of breath by the time I sit down on a bench with my coffee and watch her run in circles. She doesn't even break a sweat, her ponytail swinging in time with each strong, bouncy stride. Whenever she loops past me, I am tempted to extend my leg and watch her tumble into the geraniums. It's surprisingly difficult to quash the urge. So in the end, I leave and go home. The next day, I spend 30 minutes before the staff meeting browsing online until I find the exact same running shoes. I make a note of the brand, and at lunchtime I go down to Champs and get myself a pair, even though they cost $160. I also buy a pair of leggings, which is kind of scary because my thighs are not what they used to be, and a t-shirt with little holes in it, just like she was wearing. "We should go running together," I tell Lewis that night. He frowns.
"Why?"
"It would be fun. Don't they say that couples who run together stay together?" He laughs because he thinks I'm joking. I'm about to argue, insist, but then I think I should probably practice first. And I do, only because I want to follow her again, and it's easier to do that if I'm running. I get to the park, and there are so many of us runners, and for the first 5 minutes, I'm enjoying myself. I feel like I'm part of a tribe as we smile at each other as we pass. It's nice. I'm tempted to go up to Isabel and say, "Hi, remember me?" just to see the expression on her face. But then she might suggest we run together, and that's just not an option. Compared to Isabel, I look like a sad, middle-aged woman with saggy breasts and an expanding waistline, desperately trying to hang on to her youth. Which is exactly what I am, so that makes sense. I don't even know what I'm trying to achieve here, other than check her out, size up the competition. And it's done now. I've checked her out, and she's as beautiful as the first day I met her, which was just the other day, and she runs like a gazelle and I run like a duck. Back home, I put the clothes away in the bottom of the closet. 3 days later, and I'm having a beauty day, as I call it. I've made an appointment after work at Marcus Bond Salon because it's eye-wateringly expensive, so I figure that's good. He should be able to fix me up. I'm about to leave when Jeff shows up. Anna, can you type up this grant acquittal, please? He hands me the paperwork. It's the form, I say. Yes, I know. But it's blank. It hasn't been filled in. Yes, I know. That's why I'm asking.
But it's going to take hours, and I can't right now.
What do you mean you can't? Why not? I slip on my jacket and grab my bag. I have a hair appointment, if you must know. Oh, a hair appointment? He smiles. You know you're beautiful just as you are. He's still holding out the form. I tap it with one finger.
Ask Mila, I say. She's all over this stuff.
$220 later, and I walk out with my hair dyed almost black. It was brown, but with strands of gray peeking through, which I had said I wanted to get rid of. It's been straightened to an inch of its life. It was vaguely wavy, and with bangs cut bluntly in a horizontal line. It's in a kind of short bob, and when I say short, I mean cut it any shorter and you've gone past my hairline short, and also cut real short above my ears, and whatever is not the bob is shaved, which is most of the back of my head.
Short hair makes you look younger, says the woman cutting my hair, who is not Marcus Bond, because apparently Marcus Bond only cuts for his regular clients.
It's terrifying. And I don't look younger. I look about 50 now, which is 10 more years. Boom, just like that. And I don't know what to say. And my chin wobbles when I pay, but I don't want to cry at the hairdresser because who cries at the hairdresser? Other than small children, I mean. I don't go back to work. I just go straight home and Lewis says, "Oh, wow, Anna, what happened?" And he says it like I had an accident and I've walked in on crutches.
It just needs a wash, I say. You know what it's like. They put too much product in it. I'll be right back.
I rinse it over the sink and it's still very bad and very scary, so I grab my nail scissors and start to hack at it, hoping to transform it into some kind of cute pixie cut.
Oh, wow, Mom, what happened?
The children say later.
Nothing. You like it?
No.
Okay, then.
Can you set the table, Maddie?
And that was my beauty day, and I couldn't even get that right. I love how smart you are. I think about those words until my blood boils, and I'm biting the inside of my cheek so hard I taste blood. I think about them until my chest rises and falls with anger and my pulse races and my lips pucker and I'm breathing hard through my nose. I think about them, and then I get to work. I'd like to say what I'm about to do next is a spur-of-the-moment thing, but that would be a lie. I've been thinking about doing it for days, maybe even ever since Alex died. Was I thinking about this when I locked the notebooks in my drawer instead of giving them to his parents? Yes. I've turned the idea over in my mind ever since, trying it on for size, weighing up the risks, but I haven't done anything about it. I close my office door but don't lock it because that would be weird and invite questions. I find myself muttering positive affirmations, which makes me sound like a madwoman, even to my own ears. It's going to be fine. You deserve it. It's better this way. Think of the university. I open the document on my computer and read it again. The Penty Stone Conjecture. A simple proof. It's short, under 20 pages, and beautiful. Elegant in its simplicity, and as perfect as a circle. Then I cup my hand over the mouse and select Alex's name. I take a breath, my finger hovering over the delete button. I can still change my mind. There's still time.
I'm concerned that having you as co-author will lend your contribution more weight than is warranted.
Then I think of Louis and I think about Isabel. I think of Louis and Isabel together, kissing, making love, and a ripple of anger travels through me, so savage it made my jaw lock.
I love how smart you are.
One small click, and just like that, Alex's name is gone, leaving only mine. I may not be the most beautiful woman in the world, and I may have a shitty haircut, but if my husband loves smart so much, he's about to get an orgasm of volcanic proportions that's guaranteed to blow his brains out. I load up the webpage of the Journal of Applied Number Theory submission form.
How many authors does your article have?
One. This paper has one author only. There. Not so hard, is it? I'm doing it.
It's happening. Stop thinking, Anna. I fill in the rest of the form, typing quickly so I won't have time to think. Name, email address, institution. Just wait until my colleagues hear that one of their own has solved the Penti Stone conjecture. I just hope I'm there to see Jeff's face when he finds out. Our future will be assured. This will put us on the map. We will attract the brightest students in the country. All because of me.
I wonder if he'll ask Mila to take minutes.
I have the cursor on the submit button, gripping the mouse so hard my knuckles turn white.
This is it. Now or never.
Anna, there you are. Did your friend find you?
My heart jumps into my throat.
June, Jesus, you scared me.
She laughs.
Sorry, I wasn't sure you were in here. Your friend was looking for you.
I breathe in. My heart's still thumping.
Okay, what friend?
She lifts her shoulders.
He didn't say. I told him where your office was. Maybe he thought you weren't here. You don't usually have your door closed.
A student?
No. He said he was a friend of yours. A young man with dark curly hair and nice green eyes. Doesn't matter. I guess he didn't find you.
Dark curly hair. Nice green eyes. Was his name Ryan?
Sorry, Anna, I didn't ask.
She waits, like this is a concern for her too. Why would Ryan come here? And why on earth would he call himself my friend?
Everything all right?
Yes, thank you. I'm kind of busy here, June, so...
Oh, of course. I wanted to see if you were ready for your coffee. I made some...
June, honestly, I'm in the middle of something here. I do not want a coffee, okay? You don't have to bring me coffee and cookies every day, okay?
She blinks, reddens.
Well, sure. I meant well.
She leaves without looking at me, closes the door. I drop my head into my hands.
Well, there's a sign if I ever saw one.
I don't usually snap at and insult my friends, and yet I just did. What the hell am I doing? I sigh, open the browser again, ready to close the window and cancel the whole thing. It was a stupid idea anyway. What's wrong with submitting it the way it was intended? With both authors? And showing Jeff Alex's thesis too? He'll wonder why it took so long, but I'll say I wanted to put in the finishing touches, make sure it was truly ready. I'll still be co-author on the paper, we'll still gain a reputation of excellence. I'll still be credited. Nothing's changed. I actually feel relieved. I will go and see June immediately and apologize. Then I glance at the screen. Thank you for your submission. We will be in touch as soon as possible. I blink. It looks like I clicked the mouse anyway. Immediately, part of me wants to reach into the computer and snatch it back from the jaws of the internet. But another part of me whispers in a low voice, "It's done now, Anna. What you gonna do? Get in touch with this prestigious journal and say,
Sorry, I didn't mean to send it because it's not really mine.
Or are you going to stand up for yourself for once and take what you deserve?
I unlock my bottom drawer, retrieve Alex's notebooks, shove them in my bag.
I wish June hadn't told me about this mysterious friend, because instead of feeling triumph that I submitted the proof, I have a knot in my stomach.
Why would Ryan come here? It probably wasn't Ryan. Maybe June got it wrong and it was a student. Or a prospective student. Yes, that makes sense. Well, whoever it was, they can come back later.
Poor June. Her face just now when I snapped at her. I'll go and apologize immediately, then get on with the rest of my day.
What will I do with Alex's notebooks?
Get rid of them. That goes without saying.
I was going to find a dumpster for them somewhere. It seems kind of fitting in a way. Then I change my mind.
I don't want to take any risk. Instead, I find a secure shredding service online and arrange to drop them off later.
Then I pull out a hairbrush and get myself presentable for the staff meeting.
It doesn't really work.
I still look like a porcupine.
Chapter 15. At first, I spent entire nights awake, my unblinking eyes staring into the dark, wishing I hadn't done it. After all, I'd had so many other, better choices. I could have gone to Jeff with the notebooks and told him about Alex's research. We could have published it in his memory. Maybe his family would have let us keep the prize money. They're wealthy, they don't need it. We could have started a scholarship in Alex's name.
But it's too late now. That's what I tell myself when I wake up in the dead of night. It's too late now, I whisper, my heart hammering, Alex's ghost hovering over my bed. It's too late.
I sleepwalk through my life waiting for some indistinct hammer to fall, for things to go wrong. For Lewis to leave me. I picture the recipient of my submission at the journal reading my paper, then squinting with the look of someone who has heard of this solution before. Because what if Alex had already contacted them without telling me? That would make sense, right? That would be very much in character for Alex. Do I have an explanation for how this could happen? How could my student submit a work of genius, then die, then for the exact same work of genius to be submitted again, except this time authored by me? Do I have an explanation for that? No, officer, I do not. Not readily. But as days turn into weeks and nothing happens, I begin to think maybe, just maybe, it's going to be okay. Instead of dreading the call, I start to resent how long it's taking before they approve the paper. I feel like I've crossed a threshold. I am already on the other side, drumming my fingers, waiting for everyone else to catch up. Then I worry that it's taking too long, even though I know mathematical proofs can take months to be peer-reviewed and validated. But I also know this won't be the case here because this proof, its beauty lies in its simplicity. It's the kind of proof that someone might review and wonder why no one had thought of it before, because it's just so obvious. But I don't spend these long weeks of waiting idly. Instead, I devote them to the other part of my plan, to make my husband fall in love with me again. Turns out there's no shortage of information on the internet about how to do exactly that, and I'm good at research. Over the next few weeks, I become not someone else exactly, but someone better. More devoted, kinder, more patient, happy. I make myself look deliriously happy every time he walks into a room. I ask him about his work. I laugh with delight at his success. I nuzzle his neck and tell him he's handsome. I cook his favorite meals.
I rub my nails lightly over his back when he looks stressed.